Up next on NHL Fantasy on Ice. Already two game sevens on the books. A full breakdown around the corner. Trends to know, DFS targets, and where to lean for Monday's slate of games. Let's ring the register. It's NHL Fantasy on Ice.
Welcome back, everybody, to NHL Fantasy on Ice, Game 7 edition here on this Monday morning after a wild Easter Sunday in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Rob, doesn't get much better than the other day, man.
It really does not. And how about Tomáš Hertl with his Game 7 guarantee? He was spot on, and he even doubled down, took it a step further, and scored a shorthanded goal in double overtime.
They said it was the first shorthanded goal in Stanley Cup playoff history in a game that was decided by multiple overtimes, so totally unprecedented, totally clutch in every way. And speaking of clutch, I mean, the only reason they got to that point in double overtime was Martin Jones. And we were hard on Martin Jones. So many people were around the NHL, but this guy has come to play. And how about his stats facing elimination in his career? We picked him. We hit the nail on the head.
He made a franchise record 57 saves in Game 6. And Pete, I guess this is what he was saving it for all season long. He's just a better player when that team is facing elimination. And hey, that's probably the best case scenario for them going into Game 7, right? The fact that he elevates his play when these games are even more meaningful.
4-3, 9.53 save percentage in his career facing elimination, and we'll do so again at home Tuesday night, Sharks hosting the Golden Knights, and then, of course, the other big one on Sunday, Boston Bruins and Toronto Maple Leafs, the Bruins back from the dead as well. So this just makes for a very fun Tuesday night in the NHL, man.
I cannot wait for the games to kick off on Tuesday. I probably won't even sleep tonight just thinking about how excited I am. But a couple notes on that San Jose game. I thought that there were some interesting stat lines. Brent Burns had 42 minutes time on ice.
Wow.
That's pretty much two or more games for an average player. And then EK65, Erik Karlsson, had 36 minutes. So, I mean, I thought they both played well. In fact, do you remember that play Brent Burns in the first overtime where he took down someone? It was kind of like a blatant trip, but he got away with it.
Yeah, he was – the thing about the Sharks in this game, so three of the five periods they played, they were dominated.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought the Sharks, because of Vlasic, because of the way Burns and Karlsson played in their own end, did a great job of damage control. There were plenty of times, right, where the possession changed. It looked like Vegas was going to make a push towards the net, was going to put the pressure on, and then the Sharks were able to tap it away or pretty any means necessary. They were able to limit the damage, and that was the reason why they pulled it out.
And Brent Burns had a clutch shot block, too, in the first OT as well. There was, and on the other side of the ice, Kevin LeBanc nearly stuffed 1-5 hole on Marc-Andre Fleury, so there was plenty of action, no shortage there. I think to put this like a spin forward, I would say I'm going to stick to my preseason pick here. I'm still going to take the Sharks in this Game 7. I really like that Tomáš Hertl, he even had another Game 7 quote for you after this game. He said, "I guarantee we'll try our best." I love that. He's kind of being a little bit coy there. I think that team has a nice swagger going, and while they had high time on ice for those big guys, Burns and Karlsson, I really believe they're big-time players. Same thing with Martin Jones now, and they're going to get it done in Game 7.
He's the franchise now. I mean, some of the other pieces of the core are getting older, but I mean, Tomáš Hertl led Sharks forwards in scoring this year, 74 points, and could not have come up any bigger in games 5 and 6, had the 2 goals in game 5. What's going on with Fleury? I mean, Fleury played really well in this game, I thought, even though Sharks vastly outshot the Knights. But what's going on with these little quick shots on the left side with Marc-Andre Fleury, because Couture scored that way, Hertl scored that way in Game 5, and then scored that way again on that little defensive lapse by Shea Theodore.
The video coach, he must be putting in extra time there, because that is paying off. I think they've exposed Fleury there. And Fleury, we've seen in the past, too, he is susceptible to some leaky playoff goals. But that being said, he's also susceptible to stealing games. So I don't think you're going to know. It might be a little Jekyll and Hyde which version you're going to get on Tuesday evening, but certainly if you sat here and told me and you made the argument that Marc-Andre Fleury was going to steal the game, I would have absolutely nothing to refute that.
Now, on the Vegas side, they peppered Jones all game long. I think that if they win game seven, I think there are two guys that I thought are, you know, knocking at the door of breaking through. Alex Tuck played really well in the first and second overtimes, and Riley Smith all series long. I feel like some of Jones's best saves have been on Riley Smith. So if Vegas is going to bounce back, which I think they have a chance to do, even though they're going to be on the road, I would look at one of those two guys, maybe both, to slot into your DFS lineup for this high-stakes game.
I like that. And my two players for this game, I would take one on each side. I would take EK65 for the Sharks. I would build my lineup around him. And then I would also take a defenseman from the Vegas Golden Knights, Shea Theodore. I thought besides on that shorthanded goal that Hurdle scored in double OT, Theodore had a really strong game. He was noticeable moving the puck. He skates very well. And in these game sevens, you're going to need a guy like that to get the puck out of your own zone, start the rush. So I would take those two players and then go heavy on the forwards.
This is such an interesting series. It's been high scoring throughout. It was finally a low scoring game, but nitty gritty, as tight and stressful as that you can ever get, right? I mean, we were all on the edge of our seats. I thought the broadcast, I was listening to the Sharks feed, but it was just a marathon game, and it was a great coverage of it. It was very enjoyable, even though it was very stressful.
I was definitely stressed out watching that game. I was also a little bit stressed watching the Toronto-Boston game. I was watching it, so I guess there's a Toronto Maple Leafs bar right outside of my apartment in New York City.
Right.
I had my window open. It was a nice day in the city, and I guess my TV feed is like 30 seconds behind. So whenever the Leafs scored, I think it was that goal when Austin Matthews scored to make it 3-2 or whatever, whoever scored it, I heard the Leafs bar yelling and screaming like 30 seconds before. So I had already knew there was going to be a goal, and then I already knew that they had lost the game because it was very quiet after that point. So lesson learned, Tuesday night, I will have my windows shut.
Speaking of Austin Matthews, who's been a bigger performer than him? I know the Leafs lost that game, but he has, what, five goals in his past four games, something like that? He's come out of nowhere, and he's dismissed that narrative that he's not a big-time performer. I think that the Leafs have a great chance to win Game 7, even with how that Game 6 disappointment happened. But, yeah, Austin Matthews, big-time performance in that game.
The Bruins nearly doubled up Toronto in shots that game, if you care about that sort of thing. Some people do, some people don't. But interesting, when you break it down, I think the lines to me, Pete, were really heavily favored on the side of Boston. I'll tell you why. I think when they dropped David Pastrnak down to line two, that was all the difference there. A little bit hard for Toronto to match that. And we saw Jake DeBrusk, that goal that he scored off David Krejci's stick. He dove down, shelved it. Really beautiful goal.
And first goal of the series for DeBrusk. He has been on the doorstep many times. He's had a ton of breakaways in this series. Even after he converted on that pass from Krejci, he had another breakaway later in the game. And from Toronto's standpoint, a win or lose, you can't really knock Frederik Andersen for the way he's played in this series, right? 925 save percentage.
I like the Leafs here in Game 7. I know that, I the lines, whatever you want to look at for Boston, that's well and good, but it's a gut feeling that I have that John Tavares, while he's been quiet in this series, he has just one empty net goal. I really believe that in this situation, he is not going to let that opportunity slip away. I think he's got some extra motivation in the tank, probably seeing his former team get to round two. I would say Austin Matthews has got to be in your DFS lineup for Game 7, but my gut's telling me John Tavares scores the GWG game-winning goal.
I think that the Bruins did what they needed to do, and they channeled the urgency that they had been talking about trying to achieve for so long. So I'm going with the Bruins in Game 7. I'll stick with – that was a good – I mean, for my preseason picks, I was doubting them for a while. It was Sharks and Bruins, but Sunday couldn't have gone any better, so I'm pretty happy about that. At least these teams are showing their mettle, proving their mettle. They're not getting swept like the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's definitely a better situation to be in a Game 7 than to be sitting down watching that right now. So
and it's appropriate picks, I think, because your preseason – season picks were Sharks and Leafs.
That's right.
I know your playoff picks were Sharks and Caps.
I did pick the Bruins in round one on my bracket challenge. I don't, whether you care about that or not, I can't stay away from this gut feeling that I have that the Leafs, somehow they're going to come up huge. Freddie Anderson's going to come up big. But two other interesting factors I noticed. Charlie McAvoy played 10 minutes in the third period alone.
Wow.
And Zdeno Chara played 9:32. So that, to me, Chara's an older guy, right? So that worries me a little bit, coming out maybe a little slower on Tuesday night. Obviously, I'm kind of trying to read deep into this one, but for whatever reason, I really do feel like Toronto's got that secret sauce, and it might be a player like William Nylander, too, that's kind of had like an up-and-down year after the holdout that does something interesting, too. That Toronto team, I think a lot of untapped potential there.
It's interesting because these two Game 7s, right? So Toronto has been the better team in that series, and Vegas has been the better team, no question, in the other series. That said, Boston has already lost two of its three home games. I don't expect that to continue. Because those guys have a lot of pride, and I just think they'll take advantage of this opportunity. And then on the other side, I still think I like the Sharks in Game 7, but it's kind of my gut. My brain is telling me to pick the Golden Knights because they've been by far the better team. I love Gerard Gallant's mentality. Mm-hmm. He knew they outplayed them for most of that game, number 6, and he's patient. He's one of the best coaches in the league, and I just have a hunch that Vegas is going to turn the tables once again and shock the Sharks in San Jose.
Well, Jones, he may have to stand on his head in that scenario like he did this past game, but I think they do have a very underrated player in Joe Thornton this time of year. He's a little older now, so people don't view him the same way. But that being said, I thought he had a great performance in Game 6. His physical presence down low really had I think the Vegas had a hard time containing that on the forecheck. So that would be another little sneaky area that I would look to say, okay, if you're playing DFS on Tuesday night, you've got to have Jumbo Joe in your lineup.
He looked really good in that game. There were points where he won key battles because of his stick work. I mean, being an older guy, you don't have the speed to keep up with some of these guys. I mean, Vegas, when they're in transition, is very dangerous, very potent offense. It's interesting, though. I mean, that top line of Vegas now the past two games has not done very much. I think Stone only had one shot yesterday. Pacioretty's been racking up the shots. Get him into your lineup for Game 7 just because he's going to get 7 or 8 shots almost guaranteed. He's tied for the NHL lead with Austin Matthews in shots on goal.
That is a great return on investment there because you're right. If he's getting close to 10 shots a game, you're already making your money back and then some on that for FanDuel points. So that is a money pick.
So for the Sharks, they need to have their best game of the series. They haven't had it yet. They've shown flashes in certain games. They pulled it out in Game 6, but best maybe yet to come. But I think they need to reach that level because Vegas is a very resilient team as well.
Agreed. And a team that did reach that level in Round 1 was St. Louis. They are already moving on to the second round over the Winnipeg Jets. My first feel and reaction from that series, the Jets simply couldn't get over their Game 5 collapse and had nothing to show for in Game 6 until it was too late.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know if Patrick Laine is banged up, but didn't score a goal of the final three games of the series after the hot start, bounce-back start. The Scheifele-Wheeler line didn't have a point in the last two games of the series. Binnington was better than Hellebuck. I was looking, Hellebuck had a .913 save percentage in the playoffs and the regular season. Mm. So that's what he is, and yeah. He was not better than Binnington. Binnington had the one bad game and was very strong otherwise. So, yeah, St. Louis, I mean, to me, watching Game 5 and Game 6, we talked about it at the beginning of the series. Jaden Schwartz won that series for the St. Louis Blues, and I love that they switched up their lines late in the series, putting Braden Schenn 2C with Jaden Schwartz paid off huge.
Jaden Schwartz has scored 4 straight goals for that team, including a hat trick in Game 6. So that was really impressive to see. And for a player that was banged up a lot during the regular season, it was really nice just to see him break through, stay in the lineup, and start to produce. That is definitely, as we had it, their X factor heading into Round 2. I'm excited to see that story continue. You know, if you weren't following that well during the regular season, you know, Craig Berube should be a Jack Adams finalist out there.
Absolutely.
They were in last place in the league in December, and now they're already on to the second round. So you can't say enough good things about this Blues team. And the one thing I'll add to what your synopsis was there are 3 big defensemen in Petrangelo, Parayko, and Bouwmeester. Jay Bouwmeester's been playing close to 25 minutes per game in this series. A lot of critics were on him earlier in the regular season that he didn't have his game. He has proven them all wrong. He was saving it until this point here. And those are 3 guys very hard to play against.
He's an unsung hero for years for the St. Louis Blues. And Vlasic, another similar type of guy, defensive-minded guy that has made an enormous impact for the Sharks since coming back from injury, right? That really turned the tide. We were talking about some of those trends. But, yeah, the shutdown D for St. Louis, a big factor, shutting down those big dogs. I mean, right, we came into the season with very high expectations for Winnipeg after they lost in the conference final, but fell very short of that play for the past 2 months of the season. So a little disappointing for a pretty stacked roster.
For those that liked the Jets in round one, if you're doing the second chance bracket challenge on NHL.com, are you maybe giving the Blues a little bit more credit now, or are you still thinking, this team is overachieved, you know, depending on how you look at it? Where's your pulse on that?
I picked them to go to the conference final, and I think they will. I think they'll beat Dallas or Nashville. We'll get to Nashville in a little bit. I'm a little tired to watch. That's the one pick that I'm really regretting. I'm a little disappointed in their play. But, yeah, for St. Louis, won all three in Winnipeg. That's a damn good achievement for a team that has had ups and downs all year. And it's interesting, they won the series. I was looking, they only got two goals, no assists from Tarasenko in six games, and both of them were on the power play. So, I mean, if he starts producing at even strength, they could go to the cup final.
I like that logic. I think it's transferable to other series, too, where you see that with Washington, Carolina, Kuznetsov, similar type player.
That's
where
true,
he can
yeah.
score at will. He hasn't been scoring. And if he starts scoring, you kind of wonder how high are those team ceilings if those guys are going.
It's so true. I was also looking at, so no second-round matchups are determined right now. So the Caps have the Hurricanes on the ropes. The Blues have advanced. So the Blues join Colorado, the Islanders, and Columbus. We were just talking about this before. If we said this on New Year's Day, we would, right?
No,
you
would
be like
been,
totally whacked out.
Yeah, I would have been like, we gotta make sure Pete's all right. If those were his picks at that point in the season. But no, it makes, that's why I love the NHL playoffs. The amount of parity that you see in this sport is unlike that of any other. You can turn into a single game and be so entertained, even if you have absolutely no vested interest in either team.
And look at two of those, the two biggest upsets, right? With the top seed in the East, top seed in the West, you see Columbus getting swept and the Flames losing in five, getting blown out game five on home ice.
Yeah, let's talk about that. So the Flames, yes, they are done now. They're hitting the golf course. The 9:45 a.m. tee time is ready to go and booked. The problem here that I have with that series, Pete, and you know, you can't put it on one player, but it was really tough to see Johnny Gaudreau not get involved in the series.
It was.
Only because I think the viewers and fans missed out on an amazing epic top line between Nathan MacKinnon, Mikko Rantanen versus Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau. I kind of feel like we got gypped in that series a little bit.
I think so, too. I mean, that line totally dominated the MacKinnon-Rantanen line. But, yeah, Gaudreau, just look at the Game 5 alone. Missed breakaway, missed penalty shot. They got a goal overturned. I mean, you almost feel bad for the guy because he had an amazing, he was close to 100 points. Has had an amazing, it was the biggest reason why they won the West and ran away with it. But yeah, just tough luck, tough going. Go back to the drawing board. Johnny Gaudreau, Johnny Hockey. I think he'll be back in a big way next year.
Me too. I think he'll have a good chip on his shoulder from this. But I think it is the old adage. It's like if you don't score on a 5-on-3, you're not going to win the game. I think the same logic applies for if you don't score on a breakaway, you also miss a penalty shot in the same game. There is absolutely no way that you're winning the game.
And I was looking, so the goaltending matchup, like Philip Grubauer won the goaltending matchup, but Mike Smith was very strong. But Philip Grubauer, I mean, let's give him a ton of credit. He had like a 966 even strength save percentage in the series. I mean, he's a big and the defense has transformed. Remember how big of a liability that defense was in January, February, when the team went off the rails?
Yes, that was the main problem that team had. But I do think, you know, looking at the goaltending, you turn back to that one save Grubauer had on Backlund. I think it was in game three in overtime.
Right, and he also had a big save in game two, I think, either in overtime or regulation, right before MacKinnon scored
in
overtime.
Yes, that's right.
It was timely saves.
Very timely from Grubauer. So that's what you want to see this time of year, is just those clutch saves that keep your team in the game. Yeah. And then when you have the luxury of having Nathan MacKinnon on your team, generally the puck is going back the other direction in a very fast manner, motion blur, and usually the red goal light is the only thing that you see, and the game's over.
So a very happy team, probably maybe the happiest team on this Monday morning, is probably the Avalanche, right? Because the other two, their potential opponent, beat each other up. went to two overtimes. Now have to play a game seven where their hearts are going to be all strung out on the ice. So do you think that, I mean, just to look ahead a little bit, do you think that Colorado has a chance against either of these teams if they advance?
Absolutely.
Whichever advances?
Unless the other teams find a way to shut down Nathan MacKinnon, you know, the Colorado is going to be in this thing for the long haul here. Philip Grubauer, he has silenced anybody that thought that, you know, his regular season performance towards the end of the year was a fluke. Completely shut the book on that. So, yes, this Colorado team is going to be a tough out, and it's a good point that you brought up about, you know, how their potential opponents are really going the distance here, logging some big-time minutes. They're going to be, you know, it's going to be a quick turnaround for them. Meanwhile, Colorado's had a couple days to rest and recoup, get fully healthy. So, you know what? One interesting note on that that just popped into my mind, Gabe Landeskog was a little banged up at the end of the regular season, had that injury, kind of came back from it. I think this break benefits him big time. He will be 100% ready to go, ready to log big minutes, be physical. So that could be the difference right there.
It's huge for Rantanen as well, right? Rantanen was banged up. This team is already thriving. They already made quick work of the Flames, and now they have time. They're probably going to have a week to rest when it's all said and done. Columbus and the Islanders, we feel like they haven't played in a week and a half, but they'll probably be in action soon by the end of the week. So we have these two game sevens on Tuesday and another potential two game sevens on Wednesday, right?
that would be too much. I mean, I love game sevens, but like I can only deal with so much stress watching hockey. I don't think I can take four this year.
I don't think that Nashville's getting to a game seven. I love what I've seen from the Dallas Stars. We had a hunch about them. I know you picked them. Mm-hmm. I was on the fence about it. That's the one pick, like I said, I regret because
you're having regrets.
Yeah, just because we were so high on their ceiling, Dallas' ceiling. Remember we were saying how they could get it to the second round, maybe they could get to the conference final if mm-hmm. Ben, if Bishop, if right. Zuccarello, if Hintz. Even this Jason Dickinson kid had two goals playing on that second line with Zuccarello and Rupi Hintz, and now becomes a DFS value play for game six, chance to clinch at home.
Chance to clinch at home, and the only player that we really should be focusing in on is Radulov, who took over that game on not only a scoring level with two goals, but emotionally. I feel like every time he was on the ice, he was a difference maker. And on that same note, so was Jamie Benn. Jamie Benn's physical presence in the corners really, really took Nashville's quality defense almost out of the game at times. Every board battle was won by number 14. The hits in the corner, I think, were just too much of that Nashville D. And one more note about this, too. Both defensive groups, and I think before going into the series, you would certainly, anybody would have told you, Nashville has the edge defensively with Subban, with Yossi, with Ellis, Ekholm. But both teams had four defensemen to play over 20 minutes in that game, which shows you that Dallas's defensive group can keep pace with those guys.
Definitely. And one thing that sums it up for me, Rocco Grimaldi, 5'6", didn't really play that much this season, right? It was not a regular in their lineup. Leads the entire roster in goals in the postseason for Nashville. That says it all. Nothing for Arvidsson. Barely anything from Johansson and Forsberg. The second line has disappeared really for months now. But the fact that a guy like that is leading your team in goals is not a good look for a team that I think has enough talent to get out of the first round, but almost certainly won't.
To sprinkle some seeds of optimism here for the Nashville Predators, that being said, I do like the Dallas Stars. We know that. But Philip Forsberg had an assist and six shots on goal in that game. He was close to being a difference maker if one of those goes in. So I would keep an eye on him to see if they can force a game seven there. That would be my player to absolutely have in your lineup if you like the Predators.
Philip Forsberg has been a difference maker in the postseason in years past. So he's really the only ray of hope or sunshine for this team that has also, like we mentioned, Boston, Winnipeg struggling in home games, right? The Nashville Predators have not looked good at home either.
And it's going to be hard to have a glimmer of hope when Ben Bishop's in net. I just, you know, I would caution fantasy owners on that one to taper your expectations when you're facing the best goalie. Should be Vezina winner, in my opinion, right now. Another series, though, last one on the slate. Game six, Washington, Carolina. Caps finally elevated their play. They played a full 60 minutes, and you saw what happened there in D.C.
And it was what we talked about, right, with TJ Oshie being out of the lineup. Hagelin was on the second line, had three shots on goal, but the power play stepped up. All the big dogs for Washington came to play. Tom Wilson, two power play points in the game. Ovechkin, 3 points.
Backstrom, four points. Ovi is now Backstrom, and Backstrom's Ovechkin because Backstrom's leading the series in goals, and Ovi's leading the series in assists.
So, and this duo, like, it's a great debate right now because the Caps are one game away from moving on, and Colorado's already moving on. Which duo do you like better?
Between I'm going McKinnon, Rantanen,
maybe the higher ceiling, but definitely safer, the Ovi Backstrom vintage duo.
Yeah, I'm going the tried and true, the 1968 Mustang that runs like it's brand new. I'm definitely going that route. A couple notes about this series that I found interesting. Evgeny Kuznetsov still has yet to get that kind of that goal where we see the bird celebration and all that come out. So I know we mentioned it when we were talking about Tarasenko earlier. I would look at that player as a difference maker in a Game 6, or if it does go to Game 7, I would still say Kuznetsov is probably turning this thing up and get one of those goals. One more note, too. Dougie Hamilton from the Carolina Hurricanes. Not sure what he was doing in the corner there when Ovi was coming in hard. Ovi looked like he was a man on a mission, as he always does. 240 pounds coming at you on skates. You know, talk to the physics people all you want. They'll tell you that's going to be a lot of weight against you on the boards.
Yep.
He shied away from making contact with Ovi, let Ovi pick up the puck and put it out in front of the net for Brett Connolly to go top cheese on Peter Mrazek.
Wow.
You can't do that in a playoff game. I think Dougie Hamilton's a great player. I've had him in my fantasy lineup all season long. But come on, you got to get a little bit more there in the corner.
You got to challenge Ovechkin at least, right? Otherwise, he's going to make you look silly.
Yeah.
I know he's not he's a power guy. He's known for his shot, but he's proven in this series that he has a nice, well-rounded game, even in the later stages of his career. He's been dominant in all facets of the offensive game. From Carolina, I know that you don't love the bounce-back candidacy of them, but I would say, so it looks like Michael Ferland could come back in this game, which is a nice boost. Peter Mrazek at home in the playoffs, 2-0, one goal allowed, had the shutout, and has won 8 straight home games. So I still think if he's cheap in FanDuel, roll him out. This is a short memory for the Hurricanes, and they have a chance to force Game 7 here.
That's true. I mean, you're right. The Caps have not played well on the road. They've been kind of checked out a little bit in that area. But if they've learned anything from last season when they won the Cup, they were down every single series. They were behind in the series, and they still came back and closed the deal. If they've learned anything from that, they're going to want to come out, get that first goal, and make that home crowd absolutely suffer tonight.
I think that the Capitals will win this series. It's you hate to say it's a foregone conclusion, but because these series are so tight and
nothing
and
is
everything.
In the NHL,
but
right? Yeah,
I have a really good feeling about the Caps to win the series. That said, I think it's far from over. We'll see. Maybe Svechnikov. Could you imagine if Svechnikov? I was messaging with Isner, and I said, "Could you imagine if he skated out onto the ice? That would be like bedlam.
It would be so great for the home crowd there. That would be one of the factors, Pete, that could actually swing this thing back the other way. So it's certainly, we are going to be treated to a beauty on Monday night. And then, as we mentioned earlier, I cannot wait for the Game 7s Tuesday.
It was good at least to see Svechnikov skating with the non-contact jersey. You hate to see him go down the way he did, but the team has they got blown out on Saturday. That was not a good look, but have been extremely competitive in this series against the defending champs.
That being said, you can subscribe to this program for free on iTunes, NHL Fantasy on Ice. If you've enjoyed this show, please throw us a 5-star review, maybe a couple nice comments if we've made you some money this season.
And check out some of the other podcasts in our podcast network. I was talking to our producer. He has Jim Rutherford coming on Executive Suite, NHL Executive Suite this week. GM JR from the Pittsburgh Penguins. Not the best results here in the postseason, but this is one of the best GMs in the league. So check out that episode. Also check out NHL Draft Class with Adam Kimmelman and Mike Morial. So for Rob Reese, Pete Jensen, hit us up with your last-minute questions before Game 7s across the league, and we'll talk to you again later in the week for a second-round preview. Thanks so much for listening to NHL Fantasy on Ice.